It's really significant. So, you know, we've seen climate change having an influence on extreme heat for a long time, but 2015 really kicked it up a notch. The 2015 temperature marked the largest margin by which an annual temperature record had been broken. So prior to this year, the largest margin from the average temperature occurred in 1998, which was also an El Nino year, which is certainly having an influence. So that was when the annual temperature record passed the record set by 0.12 degrees. So it's significantly more. And
so I guess really what is confusing for people is the difference between the climate and the weather. Because, you know, if it's 34 degrees and it's 35 degrees, people go, yeah, what's the difference? So yeah. Can you explain
so
that briefly?
What you want to look at is long-term trends. And what the long-term trends show us is that this has been the 39th consecutive year in which the annual temperature has been above the 20th century average. It's the fourth time in the 21st century that a new record high annual temperature has been set. So the last hottest year on record only occurred last year, and yet we've seen that broken again in 2015 and by a significant margin. And then we also look to what the effect that this influence of climate change is having on other things around the world. So we've seen that record sea surface temperatures are triggering the world's third ever mass coral bleaching event. So up to 38% of the world's coral reefs are expected to be affected by that. We've had unseasonably early heat waves across the country driven by climate change and the strong El Nino influence. So we had an early outbreak of the bushfire season in October. We had, you know, fires burning in Australia in October. Which has driven, and those sort of early heat waves have driven major agricultural losses as well. So large areas of crops have failed and have had to be cut for hay. So, and the cost of these losses is expected to be in the order of $1 to $2 billion in Victoria alone. And then internationally, we've seen, you know, a lot of really extreme events as well. We had severe heat waves in India and Pakistan in 2015 that led to death tolls in the thousands. It was the worst bushfire season in living memory in the US, where they had more than 50,000 fires. So when you look at the long-term trends and then you look at these events combined, it's a really clear set of circumstances that shows that climate change is having a really significant influence on our both on temperature and on our ecosystems and people.
Now, what's going on here is that, from my understanding with the climate, is that events that have happened, you know, maybe 20 years ago are impacting on the climate today. So even though you can say that we're trying to do things globally to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we are actually still feeling the effects of greenhouse gas emissions that were emitted years ago.
Yes, that is true. So there's energy still in the system. So even if we were to drop to zero emissions tomorrow, the climate would continue to warm for some years because of the energy in the system that continues to accumulate. But I think that the important thing to remember is that if we don't get serious about reducing global emissions, and we've seen that world leaders have signed the first Universal Climate Agreement. So the world really is taking action and is getting serious about reducing emissions. But if we don't do that, we're only going to see global temperatures continue to warm. We're going to continue to see people being impacted by extreme weather events and by extreme heat. And I think sometimes people can be a bit blasé about heat waves. They can sort of think, oh, well, that's just, you know, a bit of a longer summer and a bit more time at the beach. But heat waves kill more people in Australia than any other natural hazard, more than bushfires. And people can be quite blasé and they can not take the right precautions during heat waves. So I think the important thing to remember is that Australia is one of the most vulnerable countries to the impacts of climate change. And if we don't take the action necessary, and if we don't rapidly transition away from fossil fuels to using clean energy, we're only going to see an increase in extreme heat and these extreme weather events.
How quickly are we talking about? Because what we have seen at those Paris climate talks last year was an attempt to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius and definitely limit it to 2 degrees. And if we're going up, a couple of or 0.2 of a degree each year, we're going to hit that pretty quickly if we're already at 1 degree.
Yeah, that 0.2 of a degree is different to the 1.5 degrees since pre-industrial temperatures. That's a different measure. So we're not going up by that much each year. But you're right in pointing out that the transition has to be rapid if we're going to try to meet that goal. So, and Australia is is really far behind lots of other countries in making the changes needed to transition our energy systems to a modern energy system powered by clean energy. Countries like the US are far ahead of us in this goal. We've seen over the weekend a moratorium issued by the Obama administration on new coal mines on federal lands. And you know, not 2 weeks after the Paris Agreement was signed, we saw the federal government issuing another approval for the Carmichael coal mine in Queensland. So I think it's important for people to understand that not only can we have no new coal mines if we're going to meet that goal and we're going to effectively tackle climate change, we're also going to have to retire Australian coal before it's fully exploited. So we really need to be...
But we're seeing a government here who are doing things like approving the Carmichael-Adani coal mine in Queensland. How does that line up with a commitment to try and reduce our greenhouse gases and limit global warming?
It doesn't. I mean, there's just no... it's pretty unequivocal. There is just no role for coal in a world in which we are tackling climate change. You know, the electricity sector is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, and we have to rapidly transition away from using coal to renewable energy. But, I mean, the great thing about Australia's position is that we're one of the sunniest... we are the sunniest country in the world. We're one of the windiest. We have an enormous number of households in Australia, 1.5 million, who have rooftop solar, and Australians have huge support for renewable energy. So we're really well placed to make that transition, but we need policies that are going to encourage investment in the renewable energy industry, because we've seen recently some statistics that show that confidence and investment in that industry is still really stagnant after a 2-year review, and then subsequent cut the renewable energy target really did a number on industry confidence. So, you know, we've got these great natural resources in terms of, you know, we've got enough renewable energy resources to power the country 500 times over, but we just need the policies to kind of stimulate the investment and put us on the path to tackling climate change.
And so we've just seen this policy announcement about urban canopies and greening our cities with trees. And we spoke to the Conservation Foundation earlier on the show this morning, talking about the kind of difference that those trees can make temperature-wise to our cities. But, you know, is that significant in terms of us taking action on climate change and global warming that we're seeing?
Look, I think, you know, we should be looking at all measures, but there is no substitute for reducing emissions from the electricity sector. And there's also a difference between, land carbon and you know, the kind of emissions put into the atmosphere from the electricity sector. And I won't get into that because I'm not a scientist. But there is the bottom line is, trees are great. Looking at a variety of options for tackling climate change are great, but there is no substitute for reducing emissions from the electricity sector. And that work has to be done if we're going to effectively tackle climate change and protect Australians from worsening extreme weather events.
Okay, we haven't heard from the government in terms of response to this news at this stage, but what would you hope to see from them in terms of a response to this news that 2015 was the hottest year on record?
I think, you know, it's more evidence that the Australians are being impacted now by climate change. And I think, you know, we had a great result in Paris. We had the world's first ever universal climate agreement. But what isn't clear is how Australia is going to meet their fairly low level of ambition. We're the lowest in the OECD in terms of our greenhouse gas reduction pledges. And we saw statistics released just before Christmas that showed that our emissions continue to go up, particularly from the electricity sector. So we're really lacking a clear plan forward that, you know, shows how we're going to meet these targets and protect Australians from the impacts of climate change. So I think increasingly as we go into 2016, that's really going to be the focus. We've got this framework internationally. Countries have agreed how they need to work together to tackle climate change, and now it's really up to Australia to set out a plan for how we're going to meet those pledges.